It's 4 a.m. and you're sucking baby snot through a tube because she's congested. If you love her that much, love her enough to make sure she's buckled in the right car seat. Find out more at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
This is your tech news briefing for Tuesday, August 3rd. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. 2021 is on track to set a record in startup financing. Startups raised $150 billion in the first half of the year, according to PitchBook. A large part of that comes not from venture capital firms, but from big money managers like mutual funds and sovereign wealth funds. And while their interest may not be new, they're backing more startups than ever and changing the fundraising landscape in the process. On today's show, Heather Somerville, who covers venture capital and startups for The Wall Street Journal, joins us to discuss what these big money backers mean for startups and for traditional venture investors. That's after these headlines. New York is taking aim at food delivery apps. The city council last week passed 5 bills that would, in part, require apps to take steps like providing a restaurant's direct phone number to eaters and extend a cap on the commissions the food delivery platforms charge until next February. The council also voted to require delivery apps to share monthly eater information with restaurants. Here's our Heard on the Street columnist Laura Foreman on why that's important.
So one of my sources actually called delivery platforms like a diner cartel. They've basically owned all of the eater data, and owning the data is power. That means that if they move their business to a different platform, let's say they're a DoorDash customer and they want to move to Uber Eats or they want to try a smaller platform, they have to start all over because that platform doesn't know who their eaters are. But if they can bring that data, they're not making a fresh start necessarily.
Food delivery platforms argue that sharing customer data would put users' personal information at risk. The payment company Square agreed to buy Australian firm Afterpay in an all-stock deal worth $29 billion. Afterpay allows users to pay for goods in interest-free installments while receiving their purchase immediately. U.S. consumers flocked to buy now, pay later services like Afterpay during the pandemic. Square said a key attraction of the deal was a growing wariness towards traditional credit, particularly among younger consumers. And speaking of financial technology, a consortium of central banks and financial regulators is calling for more oversight and stricter rules on tech giants that spill over into financial services. In a paper published on Monday, the group known as the Bank for International Settlements said regulations in most countries don't address the possible impact that big tech's operations could have on the global financial system. In recent years, fintech firms have grown in scale, playing in areas traditionally handled by banks, including processing payments and providing credit to consumers and businesses. The paper says central banks should consider designating fintechs as crucially important to the economy. All right, coming up, more money, more options. Startups have more choices of where to raise funds. What does that mean for their traditional backers? We'll discuss after the break.
Morning, Mama. How you feeling?
Great, and I'm ready for you today.
I'm checking in on ya. Morning meditation?
Check.
Dressed and ready to work out?
Check.
Check your blood pressure yet?
And check.
Boom! Great job, Mom. And about those gold earrings?
No, ma'am.
Now more than ever, it's important that we protect our hearts and the hearts of those we love. Monitor your blood pressure daily and help each other stay motivated. Rally your squad to take the online pledge at releasethepressure.org. Brought to you by the Release the Pressure Coalition and the Ad Council.
Hedge funds, mutual funds, pensions, sovereign wealth funds. These may not be the venture capitalists that many people think of when they imagine who's financing startups. But for a decade now, they've been taking a bigger role in backing young tech companies. Now, their growing interest is fueling what's sure to be a record year of financing. This year, there has been an average of 126 deals a month, worth $100 million or more. For comparison, from 2016 to 2019, there was an average of 35 deals a month reaching that level, according to CB Insights. So, how is all of this activity changing tech financing, and what does it mean for startups and their traditional backers? Joining us to discuss is our reporter Heather Somerville. Hi, Heather. Thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, great to be with you.
Let's start with the big picture. More money is being raised in the first half of 2021 than in any full year prior to 2020. Why is there so much money pouring into startups?
Well, the technology industry has provided really lucrative returns to investors for a while now. And the COVID pandemic actually accelerated that, as so many industries accelerated their digitization. Think of e-commerce, for instance, over the past 18 months or so, that made tech products even more attractive to investors. There's also longer standing issues like near zero interest rates and a lack of other good investment options in the public markets that have for some time now pushed investors more and more into tech startups.
Okay, so let's talk about that push. I mean, big money market managers aren't new to investing in startups. What made them enter this riskier space in the first place?
Yeah, around a decade ago, when interest rates were really low and appeared to be staying that way for a while, and the number of public company stocks really dropped dramatically, these big pension funds, sovereign wealth funds, hedge funds, and mutual funds, among others, were looking for new ways to find good returns on their investments. And the other factor is tech startups were staying private longer. And that's a trend that continued for some years. So they were staying in the private markets for 10, 12, 15 years, which didn't used to happen. So they were getting all their growth and providing a lot of their value in the private markets. And these big funds that hadn't previously played in startups started getting into the game.
And now they're playing a much bigger role in startup financing. So far this year, these big firms have participated in 42% of startup financing. And those deals have accounted for more than three quarters of invested capital, according to PitchBook. Do they have a different approach when it comes to startup investment?
Yeah, they really do. Of course, they're not all cut from the same cloth. But to generalize, they tend to have a lot more money. They have really big pools of capital, so they can write bigger checks. They need to write bigger checks to spend their money. They often don't want the job of being a board member or being a mentor to a startup or getting involved in company decisions about what sort of CFO they're going to hire. That's a job that traditional venture capitalists have often had and have often prided themselves in having those skills. But what we're finding is that startup CEOs don't really want venture capitalists and investors to get involved in their business too much. And here come these big funds that are writing big checks, agreeing to all sorts of terms that the startup founder wants, and they're not kind of nosing around in the business of growing the company and shipping products and establishing business strategy.
All right. What does that different approach by those non-traditional investors mean for traditional venture capital firms? Are they reacting or adapting their approach in any way?
Some traditional venture capital firms are sort of, you know, holding on to their practices and believing that they'll stay in the game by offering their expertise. But a lot of them are just trying to keep up. Deals are going so fast. The sort of traditional practices, for instance, of doing extensive due diligence on a company, running audits on a company, spending a lot of time with the founder, kind of bellying up to the bar and getting to know each other and assess each other's character. There's no time for that now. These deals are closing more quickly than ever. And what that means for some traditional VC firms is they're having to scrap their old practices to try to even get a foot in the door when a big investor is willing to close a deal really quickly and write a big check and agree to a big valuation.
Does that make the deals riskier if they're having to move quickly and maybe not do some of their ordinary checks?
I think that is a very fair assessment, that there is more risk in this industry right now. I mean, to be clear, a lot of the companies that big funds invest in are later stage. Not always, but often they're later stage. So that means that these startups are much more established. A lot of them have real businesses that are making money. But given the speed of the deal making and given the amount of money being put into certain companies, at the end of the day, there is a certain amount of risk that's being added because the losses, the value destruction, will be that much greater if that startup doesn't work out, if it goes belly up.
All right, so we've talked about investors. Now I want to look at the startups. How is this increased interest impacting the valuation of startups?
Valuations are climbing up every 3, 6, 9 months for a company. A company might see its valuation double within the span of a couple months. That is not uncommon right now. It's also very much not uncommon for companies to get double or triple the valuation that they were seeking from investors in a financing round. So the logic underpinning these valuations is certainly eroding.
Is this situation changing how founders are approaching fundraising?
It's a really good time to be a startup founder who is looking to raise money because it is pretty darn easy. The sort of standards of fundraising have changed. The old pitch decks, which are those investor presentations, your PowerPoint that you brought to a venture firm to show them about your business, those aren't necessary anymore. I'm hearing from startup founders who are saying to investors, if you want to meet with me, give me the name and number of a half dozen potential customers for my company. I'll call them, see how that goes, and then maybe I'll give you a meeting and we can talk about you giving me money for my company. This is certainly what's happening. So it's become quite a pendulum swing in the direction of startup founders.
So we know this trend has been gaining speed for a while. Is there anything that might slow it down or deter non-traditional venture investment?
There are a few factors that may deter them, at least from maintaining the pace that they have been going. And those are inflation and rising interest rates, which the Fed has signaled, you know, will happen in a couple of years. There's also President Biden's tax plan, which, you know, we will see what happens with that, but proposes higher corporate taxes, higher taxes on capital gains, which, you know, tend to hamper investments in startups. What makes me think it wouldn't be dramatic, any sort of pullback from large non-traditional investors, is that many of them have, over the last few years, created dedicated vehicles for venture capital. They're not going to give that money back. They're not going to spend it elsewhere. So there are certainly headwinds, and we'll see how those play out over the next couple years. But I tend to think it's not going to be a situation where there's a dramatic retrenchment from these sorts of investors.
That's our reporter, Heather Somerville. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for today's Tech News Briefing. You can always find more tech stories on our website, WSJ.com. And if you like our show, please rate and review it. You can do that wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.